moment, his teeth shining in the brightness of the sun, and turned towards the front door of the main house. Chapter 18. Rolling away from the capital city of Sunja, the coach bounced over the pitted road, and the forest framed in the open windows jumped with it. The pleasant smell of country air, trees and fresh water, enticed the men to take deep breaths, comfortably filling their lungs and marveling at how good it tasted. They stared out at the passing scenery, wistful at times, almost forgetting the rough road. Houses and barns, few and far between, drifted in and out of sight like dark islands in a swaying sea of yellow against a wall of jagged green. They passed the open fields known as Plager's Reach, which were used as farmland. The driver had assured his passengers they would be in Karashipa before nightfall. That suited Gol fine, as long as his ass didn't drop off from the rattling of the coach. They would find lodgings for the night in town, perhaps with a hot bath if he had his way. After such a lengthy run, he'd need a good hot soak. Harm took up one side of the coach, at one point smoothing a hand over the blue cloth covering the worn cushions, while Gol and Muluk shared the opposite seat. They were the only ones aboard the vehicle, which Gol had reminded them twice already was fortunate. "As some of us are, larger than others," he'd said without a smile, keeping a hand on his crutches where he'd laid them across the floor, pinning them to the wall.
"Was that a jab, friend Gol?" Harm asked. "Because if it was, I can sling it back, I'll have you know."
"Wasn't a jab," Gol said. "You're fat. I've no idea how you ever managed to survive a fight when you were carrying all that weight." Harm placed a hand against his protruding gut.
"This is nothing. It's armor."
"Armor that bleeds."
"Only if I get hit," Harm said. "See, men look at me and think what you're thinking, and then I go and prove them wrong. I'd be too fast if I were thinner. Fights would be finished too quickly."
Gol stared at the Siberian in disbelief, his head resting in a hand propped up by his elbow sticking out the window. "It's not amusing. We need to take some of that off you. If you were back in Cree..."
"Nice country, I've heard."
Caught off guard, Gol stopped, frowned and continued. "If you were back in Cree, my trainers would punish you for being such a size."
"Would your trainers allow me to fight with them?"
"Not if you looked like that."
"Well then, I wouldn't have that problem, would I?"
Harm said through a straight line of a smile. His frown deepening, Gol averted his gaze out the window. "Big forest coming?" Muluk craned his head half out his window. Harm twisted around and did the same on his and Gol's side, knowing full well he blocked the Cree's view.
"So there is," Harm settled back. "These copses grow together. You know the name of this area?"
"No," Muluk said. Gol shook his head, clearly not in a mood to talk with the Siberian.
"Damn being a foreigner, eh?"
Harm smiled.
"Plenty of farmland," Muluk squinted in the breeze. "Sunja grew itself up out of these lands. I thought it was livestock. That as well. Furs, cloth, silk."
Harm became thoughtful.
"Do you know what they make the silk from?"
"No."
"Worm shite."
Muluk's face crunched in disbelief.
"What? That's not true."
"It is, it is."
Harm grinned.
"Worm shite."
Gol clenched his forehead in his hand, an action that didn't go unnoticed by Muluk.
"Is it true?"
"No, it's not true."
"It is,"
Harm insisted.
"I'll ask one of the guards there once we stop again."
Muluk bounced as the wheels rolled over a pothole.
"We already stopped once for a piss," Harm said.
"Unless you mean when we reached the town itself."
"That's what I meant,"
Muluk replied with a chop of his hand. "We'll have to stop for a piss again, or just to get out for a bit. Stretch the legs," Gol added.
"Order crutches,"
Harm said.
"Don't start anything,"
Muluk warned him.
"I'm starting to fall asleep here."
"Too rough to fall asleep," the Siberian said.
"After general quarters, this suits me well enough."
Gol went back to watching the passing landscape, causing Harm to break into a grin. Daylight gradually darkened as the tall elm trees formed a natural canopy above. Wild grass rose up, perhaps as high as a person's knee, but stopped and drooped at the edge of the travelled road.
The ride started to smooth out in Harm's mind, and by late evening, sleep tugged at him. He sniffed and wiped his face, feeling sweat there. As nice as it was to have a breeze blow through the coach, the temperatures were still high. Across from him, Gold had already gone under, his forehead pressed against one side of the interior. Next to him, his Cree countryman also struggled with staying awake. Mullock's mouth hung open as his head tapped the back wood in a warped beat. His unshaven beard appeared even blacker in the shadowy light. Harm felt the Hellion's urge to scream right then and frighten the shite out of both men, but that would only cause him to sleep with one eye open later on. Crees could be right vengeful bastards. Mullock crossed his arms, and his head slumped forward, bouncing lightly with the coach. Only a moment later, a thin line of drool slinked from his lips to his lap. Harm made a face and closed his eyes. He hoped he didn't have nightmares. The coach came to a stop with a gentle shake, rousing Harm from his sleep. It was night, and from where he sat, he couldn't see any moon. He yawned and made a face, glancing out the window and seeing torchlight in a few homesteads' open windows. Woodsy air carried a hint of smoke, cooking roasts, and something else that was certainly food, but unidentifiable. The coach rocked as the drivers and guardsmen hopped to the ground, their groans piquing Harm's interest all the more. He scratched his belly and kicked at his sleeping companions. Gol woke in an instant, gasping and whipping his head about as if he'd been underwater for some time.
"We're here?"
Mullock straightened, wiping his mouth with an open palm.
"We are."
Harm eyed the homesteads, earlier than expected, but it doesn't seem like much, though. The door opened and one of the drivers, a portly man wearing a white shirt, bade them step out.
"Karashipa," he announced.
"Is there an inn nearby?" Gol asked.
"An inn? Not here. Too small."
Darkness veiled the driver's face.
"There's a small alehouse down by the water, however, but no rooms, if that's what you're looking for."
"It is."
"Well, you're in luck. The night's a good one, and there's no rain on the air. A good time to sleep outside."
"Outside?"
Gold did not sound impressed in the least.
"We sleep under the coach all the time during fair weather. Over there are a few more trees. It's quiet enough, and safe. We've pulled up into a little waiting area near the village. We'll be heading back at noon, by the way.
Should be plenty of time.
We'll be here."
Gold slipped out the open door. "You said village. I heard it was a town."
"A town?"
The amusement in the driver's voice was unmistakable.
"Who told you that, Gurry? Not enough people to be a town. You'll see."
"Not much to look at, is it?"
Harm commented.
"There's a lake that way."
The driver pointed west as he walked towards the horses. "That's where the alehouse is. You'll find both. Easy enough." The driver left the three companions to the darkness of the trees.
"Well?"
Mullock asked. Gold swung himself to a nearby tree trunk and settled down.
"Not the first time I've slept outside."
"Sounded like the first time."
"Yes. Well, you weren't listening right."
"Hungry."
Harm touched his belly. "It'll be easier to find things in the morning," Gold said. "This isn't Sunja. Barely a village by the looks of it." He was right on that point. The road twisted off, but in the sparse light, Harm couldn't see exactly where. He liked the smell of the place, however. After the city's brick, stone, and sewage, the country air was almost as potent as mead. Sounds of distant conversation, ghostly in the night, perked his ears.
"What are you waiting for?"
Mullock was already stretched out on the earth with his upper half leaning against a dark trunk.
"Not that tired."
"Not a point of being tired," Gol explained from where he settled down. "It's waiting until the morning. Can't seek out Thymondas after dark. The man could be sleeping or anything. We'll find him in the morning. At least then he'll be able to see our faces."
"I'm going to find this alehouse,"
Harm muttered, and didn't wait for a reply, though he did hear Gol say something in Cree. He didn't want to hear the translation. It would probably be a warning about not spending any coin. A small glade surrounded the parked coach, and he spotted the driver and one guard settling down for the night. Harm waved to them both. One of the shadows raised his hand in reply, and Harm walked off,
following the road, which led deeper into the village of Karashipa. The houses, their hewn timbers fitted together with the seams filled with clay or some such material, lay on either side of the bare road. Huge plots of land divided each dwelling. Trees grew between the structures, and as Harm walked on in the night, listening to the soft sounds of voices coming from within, he found himself smiling at the sleepy quiet. He wondered if the villagers living here were farmers or other tradespeople. Farther down the road he trotted, expecting to strike the edge of the lake at any moment. Though the night was moonless, he could make out the vast black surface of the water and a few indistinct lumps. Conversation and laughter drew him towards a small building on his right. A doorway briefly opened, and a figure trekked to the corner, heavy footsteps clapping on the bare planks. The shadow winked out of sight. Harm peered at the open windows glowing with firelight. Probably the only business in the whole village, he thought, and proceeded, thinking about buying a drink and seeing what was what. He stepped up to the door, noting the wispy sheets of netting over the windows to keep the biting bugs out. The thick logs appeared old and fibrous, long since dried out and bereft of scent. The door itself was ill-fitting in the frame and looked more like an archery target, as several splintery grooves and holes scarred the surface. The alehouse wasn't anything fine, not like the ones in the city, but serviceable, came to mind. All was fine in Harn's opinion as long as it did what it was supposed to do. Patting his belly in fond anticipation, he took hold of the door's latch and pulled it open. Some smoke drifted out, and seven faces turned in his direction. Five men sat divided amongst two of four tables in the place, while a pair of rough-looking characters swayed at the bar. They paused, bleary-eyed, with their pipes. A rough-looking stone fireplace dominated one wall, with the remnants of a few wooden junks smouldering within, while above it, stretched out and nailed in place, was a rough canvas painting of rolling hills and a sun. A woman minded the place from behind the counter, like a fresh soldier standing guard behind battlements, and gave him the only nod as he crossed the threshold. Harm greeted them all with what he felt was a friendly wink and grin, while very much aware that the conversation had died away into nothing. Still, he was inside now, and thirsty. "What do you have?" he asked the bar wench, putting on his pleasant best of a smile. "Just ale and sunjan black." The woman studied him and made no qualms about it, as did the rest. "Nothing to eat? You came in too late. Then a pitcher of ale." "A pitcher?" She smiled in a dubious way. "Five silver." "Five silver?" That impressed Harm. "Half price of anything in Sanja." The woman, with her sable hair tied back and her narrow face, regarded him for a moment as she took a picture and went to one of five raised barrels behind the counter. She wore a plain green dress buttoned to the neck, with a white apron tied around her waist. Harm thought there was nothing special about her looks, certainly not like the dishes in the city, but his eyes ran over her form out of habit. There was, just perhaps, a figure well hidden beneath her unflattering clothing. He felt his smile widen when he realized that the two men standing at the bar had steadied themselves and watched him with stoic expressions. They were farmer types, smaller than the Jiberian, but solid-looking. Harm knew it only took one wrong look to set off a protective husband, and a blade was always an equalizer. Clearing his throat, he nodded to the pair. They didn't return it, and he knew then they'd seen him sizing up the bar wench. Behind him, someone laughed, perhaps a little too loudly, but Harm didn't turn around. The woman plopped a wooden pitcher and cup down in front of Harm as he fiddled with his purse. He still had a few coins left, and he placed one of the gold ones on the counter. The expression on the woman's face softened just a little as she took it. "Won't be needing the cup." Harm nudged it back towards her. She made it disappear without a word, and then avoided his gaze by looking at the counter as she counted out his change. She left the few coins on the counter before moving away. Frowning at his failed attempt, Harm scooped up the silver and deposited it in his waist purse. He hoisted the pitcher in one fist and saluted the nearby men. Harm took a great draining sip from it, downing a third before placing it on the counter. "Good," he thought,
and rubbed his face. The trip had been lengthy, and he was growing increasingly tired of travelling distances without anything to eat or drink. Scratching at his belly, Harm belched loudly enough to startle the pair of smokers, and took a moment to study the cosy interior of the little alehouse. The men sitting at the table still stared at him. He could feel it, but he wouldn't turn around. The long-cut logs of the place put Harm in mind of the homesteads back in his native land, and a longing for the coolness of short summers.
"He's a fat one, isn't he?"
someone croaked from behind him. That made Harm cock an eyebrow.
"Thick around the neck, too."
He took another swallow straight from the pitcher before turning. The speaker was a shriveled-up thing, an ancient-looking topper, his jaw hanging low as if panting for breath, with one gleaming tooth jutting up from the lower lip like a forgotten fang. Grey hair was slicked back, keeping clear of a face that hadn't aged gracefully. His clothing, perhaps once well-made, were three sizes too large for him.
"Hey, you see me now, don't you?"
The man wheezed, his glaring, rheumy eyes locking on the Jiberian.
"You fat bastard."
Harm looked from this unpleasant old punt to the younger one sitting beside him. Dark of complexion, hair and eyes, he observed Harm with a lethal air, his chin unshaven. Well-built and broad of shoulder, his tunic displayed arms that were coated with a sheen of fat, but powerful-looking all the same.
"My apologies."
Harm pleasantly saluted them both with the pitcher.
"I'll leave shortly."
"Not soon enough."
The old man puffed the words as if their very utterance pained him. He grinned, displaying yellow nubs that passed for teeth. His jaw rolled as though he chewed on something, but his sickly eyes remained on Harm, making him uneasy.
"Not soon enough, fat bastard. You fat!"
The attacker seethed the word to its fullest, making the sound snap.
"Bastard. There was a time when, if a man had that much meat on his bones, it was considered hoarding food while others starved. Gluttony is a crime. A crime, you unfit ball licker."
Harm regarded the thick man sitting next to the old bastard.
"I think he's had enough."
The one with the dark complexion and eyes said nothing, but the corner of his mouth hitched ever so slightly in a sneer.
"He hasn't had a drop." "You wish I did."
The old man cackled and broke into a cough that made his sloped shoulders jump.
"You wish I did? No. I see you with these old sick eyes of mine, and I can tell you, you filthy wet dog blossom, you shite-eater, that the pitcher of horse piss you're quaffing down is worth more than 20 of the likes of you."
Harm frowned.
"Well, that's rude of you." "You speak funny, too."
The old man drew back in curious abhorrence.
"Well enough, mind you. Probably can't quite wrap that foreign tongue around a civilized one, but you make a go of it. Keep just enough of an accent to believe you're charming. Probably figure it's endearing somehow. Those sneak charms are lost upon me."
He chuckled then, a rattling noise that ended in a heavy cough. He leaned to one side and hawked, spitting up lengths of yellow phlegm. The old man allowed two thick strands to hang off his lip. Harm straightened, the feeling of unease giving way to revulsion. That was a sight he could well have done without. But the sickly speaker wasn't finished.
"Sunja's been too damned accepting of other races. Too damn welcoming. Tainted her blood, made her weak. Now we have..."
A pallid hand groped and pulled at the mess dangling from his weathered face, and retreated under the table to wipe it on his leg.
"We have breeds. Breeds."
He hissed to the point of coughing again.
"Fat breeds like you."
Harm exhaled and took a quick pull of his pitcher. He didn't have to drink it at all. He could leave it on the counter as it was, but he'd paid money for the ale. He glanced to the serving wench and noticed she wasn't taking too kindly to the jabbing either, but wasn't about to do anything. Harm didn't expect her to. She was only a barkeep, a wench.
"Breeds, walking about, and packing the asses off anything lying still enough. Making more breeds, an ending cycle of impurity. an ever-fattening cloud of flies over a pile of shite, maggot shite, dropped out of Simon's rosy ass itself and left to spatter decent folks like ourselves. Well,
Harm finished his last bit of ale in a painful gulp. He nodded affably to the woman, slapped his belly lightly, and made to leave. Just then the door opened, and a man stepped in, a few fingers taller than the Siberian, huge and heavy-muscled. This one wore no tunic, and his bare chest, slicked with black, heavy curls, heaved as if he had downed more than his fair share of drink. He ducked slightly to fit inside the room, and when he did, Harm felt the temperature drop and the tension rise.
"I'm not finished with you,"
the old man sneered, as if sampling venom. On those words alone, the giant's eyes squinted with violent apprehension, and he blocked the Siberian's exit. Harm didn't like that. He didn't like getting into fights while drinking, and he never liked being cursed at by a corpse of an old man.
"When I'm done lecturing, boy, I'll let my man allow you to go, unless..."
The contrary pisser stuck his head out as he leaned forward with dawning delight.
"Unless you wish to fight, huh? Wish to fight? You, you great greasy prick. He'll kill you where you stand. Put a blade through that fat neck of yours and let your breed blood bubble up."
Harm remembered his sword then, and thought perhaps he could frighten them all. From what he could see, no one else in the place had any weapons. With that, he casually placed his left hand to his pommel, making his intentions clear.
"Now you listen to me, you hollowed piece of horseshite,"
Harm said, steel in his voice. "I'm leaving now. Right out that door. If your boy tries to stop me, I'll put this blade up his ass and make him sing like a castrated dog. And when I've done that, I'll do the same to that pretty little girl beside you making eyes at me." The old man's companion bristled at the insult, his dark eyes suddenly flaring to life. "And after I've done painting the walls here in true breed form, I'll slap you around like the brazen he-bitch you are. Knock that one pearl of a tooth out of your hole so people will really have to think about which end the shite drops from." If looks could start a fire, the old man's indignant glare would have illuminated the whole of the night.
"No one speaks to me in such..."
Harm didn't need to listen to more. He took his sword out and scowled at the brute blocking the door. Checking on the rest of the patrons, he stopped the barkeep.
"My apologies,"
he said, and meant it. Her expression said the same. Then he brought the blade up, torchlight flickering along the steel.
"I'll find you, you sack of pig-ready gutty. I'll find you,"
the wretched man sputtered from behind his table.
"When my lads are better prepared, I'll find you and skin that filthy colour off your hide. It'll take days to do it and let your blood run."
But Harm had had enough. He walked towards the door, weapon ready. He'd learned long ago that when bluffing, it was best to be fully prepared to do as you promised, and to make it known through the eyes. Harm stared at the big man as if he were a piece of meat ready for the butcher. The lout backed off, actually hissing at the Siberian, half daring him to take that swing and let Simon sort out the mess afterwards. Harm then heard a screech of wood on wood and knew it was the other one, the dark-eyed one, getting to his feet.
"I'll find you, breed. I'll find you and slice your balls off."
The old man cackled, every third word punctuated with a rattle of loose phlegm and a brutal cough that almost made Harm sick.
"I'll find you!"
The Siberian edged around the large brute and backed out of the alehouse, his sword bright with deadly intent, reflecting the way his mind was warming to the notion of a little bloodletting. He stepped off the front step and moved away, concentrating on the path ahead and still hearing the old man cackling.
"I'll find you! I'll find you!"
Harm glanced over his shoulder to see two shadows, one taller than the other, standing outside the alehouse and watching where he went.
"Right rude old punts,"
Harm muttered, keeping his blade unsheathed. He wandered back up the road until the alehouse was out of sight. The two henchmen didn't appear to be following, so he relaxed a little, but decided on sleeping somewhere away from the coach site, just in case. By the time he reached his companions, their snores made the tension slip from his features. He wandered through some trees, and found a place where he could see both the coach and anyone attempting to sneak up on him in the night.
"Breeds,"
insisted the hoarse voice of his tormentor, still lingering in his head. Harm ground his teeth, applauding his own restraint. It wasn't often he had to stop himself, but it wasn't often he was so pig-headedly insulted by old men who should rightfully be dead. His last thought before sleep took him was of the apologetic expression of the woman behind the bar. Chapter 19. When he opened his eyes, Pignot felt the sting of the knife wound on his forehead. A grimace twisted up his face as he felt the cut, tracing the stitches with two fingers.
Stitches.
He had stitches in his head. Where had he gotten those? And when? Above him, thick planks lay across dark timbers coloured with shadow. Light lanced into the room through an open window, and Pignot could hear the daily commotion of the masses outside. Groaning as he pulled himself into a sitting position, Pignot felt the blood rush from his head, replaced by a dull pounding in his temples.
"Never drink again,"
he breathed, knowing he'd be on the grape before the day was done. He'd lied to himself many a time before and gotten used to it. There were two more opened windows in the walls and another three cots filled besides the one he lay upon. A desk and work area was next to one of the windows, and an impressive collection of knives, saws, tongs, and things he knew not the purpose of hung from pegs or were laid out with professional grace, all redolent of medicinal herbs.
Healer's house.
He recognized it now and winced again. How in Seaman's hell was he going to pay for this? A quick feel of his pockets, not minding the quiver in his hands, told him they were empty. He couldn't remember if he spent it all or lost it or was robbed the night before.
"Alive, I say,"
a voice said, and Pignot looked upon a middle-aged man, emerged from a stairway, his hands gripping the edges of the door as he hauled himself up. The newcomer wasn't overly tall and possessed blonde hair, an argument away from light brown. Under this were eyes of smoky grey. Upon climbing to the top of the steps, he straightened out the white tunic he wore and walked over to his patient.
"You'll want this, I believe."
The man handed Pignot a pitcher filled with water. He could smell the goodness before he tasted it.
"Thank you,"
he muttered, before downing most of the water, lowering the vessel with a gasp and wiping his mouth with a hand.
"Settin' above. That was needed.
There's a chamber pot underneath the cot as well, if you need it."
"I need it."
Pignot handed the pitcher back and bent over to see the clay pot, its surface etched with fancy writing. Why people crafted such pretty work for shitting and pissing in was beyond him. He dragged it out and fumbled with the front of his trousers. The healer turned away. A moment later, Pignot groaned with release, and the sound of a healthy stream cut the air.
"Ah, that's good. Almost as good as the water. Easy in, easy out, eh?"
Pignot chuckled and sighed. Once finished, he wrung out one last shivering dollop before returning the pot under the bed. A moment later, he tucked himself away and took a breath.
"Lords above, I got dizzy towards the end.
How much does one have to drink to get dizzy when he pisses?"
The healer shrugged.
"Quite a lot, I imagine."
"I suppose so."
Pignot smiled faintly and indicated his scalp.
"Thank you for this."
"You're welcome,"
the other replied pleasantly.
"How much do I owe you?"
"Nothing.
You gave me your last coin last night."
"I came in last night."
"You did. Some men brought you in. Soldiers, by the looks of them."
"Soldiers, eh?"
Pignot became thoughtful, trying to remember what had happened the night before. His shirt was missing, and he took in the scrunched hardness of his otherwise fatless midsection, presently mottled with purple and yellow bruises he couldn't remember receiving. Then he remembered the fight, and the man called Prages.
"Where am I, in regards to the pit?"
"North."
"What's your name?"
"Bindon."
You've been working at this for long? Had my infirmary for a few years, I suppose?
Bindon replied. There are quite a few older ones about, but I expect to gather more patients as time goes on.
The way of it. Where's my shirt?
Oh, I had to throw that away. Blood covered it. Ruined. Bindon frowned. You cut yourself to the bone last night, by the way. A right frightful gash.
They're all right frightful. But thanks for sewing it together.
I don't owe you anything, he asked again. Bindon shook his head.
May I stay here for a bit?
Pignot asked quietly. Get back my strength. Perhaps a little more water.
Certainly. There's room, as you can see.
Just be mindful of your... Bindon touched his own forehead to get his meaning across. Feels like I had the top of my head taken off.
It actually looks as if you had the top of your head taken off. You could pass for a Sujin returning from the front, if you wanted.
No. Wouldn't want to sully their name.
Bindon shrugged and, as if a thought took him, handed back the pitcher and turned to leave.
I'll return, he promised.
Pignot watched him go, then sipped on the water remaining in the pitcher until it was all gone. Dust motes bounced dreamily off sunbeams cutting through the open windows, and the heat informed him that the day was already a warm one. Best to stay low if he could. He felt the straw-stuffed mattress of the cot and drew his calloused palm over its pointed lumps, unable to remember exactly when he had owned a bed he called his own. Not even when he was a boy did he have one, having been an orphan and living off the streets with others of his kind. Bindon returned as promised, carrying another pitcher and a loaf of bread. He handed both over to Pignot.
The bread's a day old, what my wife made yesterday, but it's good.
Thank you, Pignot said with genuine delight.
Might I eat it later? Guts a little,
You may. Bindon appeared both puzzled and pleased.
You took my last bit of money as well. I can't pay you for this.
Don't worry about that.
You have a day here to recover at least. Anything after that, I'll make a list and you can pay me later.
Kind of you.
Bindon shrugged, as if it were simply business.
You live here?
The healer nodded. Just down the steps there and through a short hallway. My house is behind the infirmary.
From my father.
We live here now.
Father's passed on.
He is, as is my mother.
5 years now. Sorry to hear that.
Bindon waved a hand.
No matter. He taught me what he could. What I do from here on in is my choice now.
We'll do fine, I imagine.
Pignot found himself hoping this young man and his wife would indeed prosper. He seemed a right friendly sort, he thought, just as Prageous's leering face shimmered in his mind's eye.
You're a soldier? Bindon asked.
What?
No, just a pit fighter. Free trained. In and out of trouble, as you can see.
Bindon nodded, keeping his thoughts.
You're a big man. Ever do any soldiering?
Worked as a hand with builders. And ate my wages, pretty much. Took up the steel when I was old enough.
Probably should have stayed with the builders.
Damn sight better.
Easier on the clothing as well.
They chuckled at that. Bindon glanced away for a moment before clearing his throat.
Well, I'll be in and out of here for most of the day. Stay in the shade and sleep.
Close the shutters if the noise from the street becomes too much, but rest easy.
You're fine here.
Thank you again.
Again the hand waved as if dispelling evil spirits.
You take your time and stay on that cot. It's not the best, but it's yours for the time you need to get your bearings back.
With that, Bindon departed the room. Pignot listened to the healer's softly receding steps on the bare wooden stairs, guessing the man wore slippers inside.
He took a sip from the new pitcher of water and relished the feeling of it going into him, bringing life back to his person.
Putting the pitcher on the floor, Pignot lay back down and gazed at the woodwork of the ceiling. Dust motes wandered through his vision at times, and the sounds of the city in the street below sometimes caught his attention, but never for long. He stopped thinking about Prageous and the other men who had attacked him, and they didn't follow him into his sleep. The day started hot and became almost unbearable, waking Pignot from his slumber. He didn't care about losing his shirt when the sweat ran off his skin and soaked into the cloth covering the cot. He wandered about the upper room, peering out at the heads milling up and down the side street, people passing the healer's house and carrying on with their business. Bindon came up twice more during the day, bringing more bread and two apples, which Pignot devoured almost as soon as he took them. They didn't have time to converse then, as someone from the street wandered into the healer's house and called for the healer. For the remainder of the day, however, Pignot didn't have to share the upper quarters with anyone else, and for that he was thankful. The day's heat lessened with the evening, and a light, wonderful breeze blew into the upstairs room. Pignot went to sleep, staring at the darkness of the ceiling and listening to the murmurs of people outside. The next morning, he got up and made ready to leave. He hauled on his boots and haltingly made his way down to the ground floor of the house, feeling things ache as he moved, and passing the hallway which led to Bindon's house. "Leaving?" Bindon startled the pit fighter. Pignot located him behind an old desk, with a worn-looking book open before him. The healer sipped on something in a cup, peering at him through wisps of steam. Pignot took a breath before answering, smelling ointments that reminded him of deep forests. "Leaving. Do I owe you anything?" "No. But if you need anything more done, please return." "If I ever get my head gashed open again, you mean." Pignot saw the first floor had a number of shelves along the walls, full of vials and jars containing items pertinent to a healer's trade. Some held fibrous white roots preserved in juices the color of piss, while others held unknown, organic-looking baubles that sat and stewed. All a mystery to him. "Well, yes. Or anything else, but nothing life-threatening." Bindon lowered his cup. "I will. Here, take this." Pignot chuckled. "More bread. Just how much of it does your wife make?" "Enough to give away. Or you just don't like bread." Bindon smiled. "I like it well enough." "Tell her she's a fine baker." "I will. Good luck to you in the pit." Pignot waved at the healer and passed through the front door. With the sun rising and the streets practically deserted, he headed east, squinting in the morning light, and intending to strike north once he reached a main road. He reached around and gave a tug on his long war braid for the luck to find his way back to the pit. He didn't see the man detaching from the shadows of an alley and following from a safe distance. General Quarter smelled like shite. After spending the night in the nest of the healer, the underground felt more like a rumbling, musty sewer reeking of gas than a place to sleep. Or perhaps that was the problem with the place. It was being used for too many things by too many people. The air rankled his nose the deeper he went, until he got to the lower level and looked about in the dark. Torches burned from sconces set into walls, fighting a losing battle against the gloom. He stepped carefully around snoring bodies that lay scattered throughout, searching for the spot where Harm usually slept. Moments later, he found it and discovered a trio of men sleeping there, all unknown to him. The pair of Crees were nowhere to be seen either. The matchboard, large and prophetic, loomed up, and Pignot wandered over to it, whispering the names aloud. He didn't see Harm's, or anyone else's he knew for that matter. Rubbing his face, he wandered to another spot where he and Harm and the others had once stayed. That area was still bare, but the large cloth sack containing Harm's armor and helm was missing. Pignot shook his head. Someone hadn't actually stolen that garbage, had they? The thought gouged him. He gazed about the immense underground chamber, finding shadows that moved and those that did not. Huffing, he gave up and hunkered down, got comfortable, and listened to the dull, rattling snores that seemingly shook the pit's foundations. He tried hard not to think about a clean cot and fresh bread. Chapter 20. The rickety gates of the stable of Grisholt opened early in the morning as men finished preparing a wagon and a coach for departure. With a greasy saunter, Grisholt made his way from the entryway of his house and climbed into his transport. There, he shifted his ass upon the cushions until just so, and waited with an air of indifference as Brackus closed the door behind him. The stable owner truly hated travelling at such a time,
not appreciating the fresh country air or dew moistening the courtyard grass. But travel he must, for on this day his fortunes would change. In anticipation of this change, he wore his finest clothes that hadn't been wasted by time, a rosy vest of satin over a black shirt and beige breeches, befitting a man of his position, complemented by high leather boots of worn but distinguished-looking leather. The perfumed water he wore was the last to his name, and he promised himself that after this day he'd replenish his supply. He heard the driver snap the horses into movement, and the two vehicles rattled through the gates, eventually turning towards the grey heights of Sunja. Inside his private coach, Grisholt tugged on his beard and thought about the day, and the first fight of the season for his stable of warriors. He'd already spoken with Gunjar, and though he could see the young man was disappointed with the order to lose his first match of the season, Grisholt assured him there would be other seasons for him to perform well. The fighter could certainly make a name for himself, cutting up free-trained warriors in other matches, outside of the regular tournament, which would be practice all the same, and opportunity to make a little extra gold. In addition, losing the match would endear him to the stable of Grisholt, even place him in Grisholt's favour, and that was something that couldn't be measured in gold alone. His loss would extend life not only to the stable, but also to his fellow pit fighters as well. Gunjar accepted it, but Grisholt could see he wasn't happy. The old owner didn't care in the least about the man's feelings on the matter. In the end, Gunjar did what he was told to do. They made the short journey to the city and entered the main gate with no questions from the scars. Grisholt took the time to gaze out his window and studied peasants, farmers leading livestock, and the shoddy merchants in their open stalls. He gathered a fine hand cloth and placed it to his nose and mouth. After the clean air of the countryside, smelling the shite of thousands of people pent up within city walls wasn't something he could endure for long periods, and to think they thought it fresh. Even as the coach's ride smoothed out, a farmer stopped in front of the horses with a string of cows. Grisholt leaned out to see what the delay was, just in time to glimpse one of the beasts defecating right there in the street. He drew back, but the image remained in his mind. And who knew how long the offensive pile would remain there, and the countless number of feet, bare and booted, that would trek right through it. He thanked Seddon above he wasn't born to a farmer's life. The coach rolled past the scene and made good time until it stopped once more. A question on his face, Grisholt again looked out his window. People of all their shapes and colours milled about, but nothing held his attention for long. He leaned to the other side in time to spy Caro pass by the window and rap on the door. Grumbling, Grisholt quickly closed all of the shutters, encasing the interior in mid-morning gloom. Assured that people outside could no longer see in, he gripped the handle and cracked the door open, screwing up his face at his agent. "Get in quickly." Caro did so, and deposited himself on the cushion opposite his employer, his face veiled in shadow. Grisholt closed the door and eyed the man with contempt. He detested stopping in the middle of a street. It drew unwanted attention. "What is it? And it had best be something to catch me on the way to the arena." Caro fidgeted, not at all comfortable. Grisholt thought the man looked terrible. His shirt had been torn open to reveal hairy, sweltering parts of him the stable owner didn't wish to see. Sweat dribbled down the agent's face, and there was something about him that just seemed unwell. "Well, I saw Kurge early this morning." Caro glanced at the shutters as if suddenly aware of where he was. "No one can see you in here," Grisholt blurted impatiently. "Well, why aren't you at the pit?" "Kurge," Caro faltered. "He tortured me." That made Grisholt cock an eyebrow. It didn't really surprise him. Not really. "Did he pay you for the information?" Caro shook his head. He was going to chop off my fingers." Grisholt looked at his henchman's hands. All digits were in place and accounted for, which did surprise him. "But he didn't. He didn't. Instead, he held his hand, and I told him about the free train, the visiting Clavellus. You didn't mention anything about the gold?
Grisholt leaned in, his temper rising. By Simon's blue pisspot, he'd strangle this idiot right here in the coach if he so much as...
No. Not that. Just everything else.
Everything else?
What? Everything else?
Caro hesitated.
He knows I work for you.
Grisholt shrugged impatiently before forcing himself to assume a veneer of indifference.
As if I care what that ogre thinks. Courage is elemental at best.
Now then,
did he harm you in any other way?
Caro shook his head so violently, he might have just been pulled from a winter river's icy depths. Not that Grisholt particularly cared. Spies weren't too difficult to come by. But he could plainly see his man was somewhat unhinged, and unhinged agents could be damaging.
All right. Now think. Did you?
Grisholt paused for a moment, for the next part was quite serious.
Tell him anything else.
Sensing the danger he was in, Caro again shook his head and exclaimed,
No! Nothing! I swear!
His hands clenched the ragged ends of his shirt. Grisholt made the conscious effort to appear relieved.
I have to be certain you understand. You said nothing about my plans this day.
Nothing, I swear.
Caro's eyes widened in fright. Grisholt stared into those terrified orbs.
I believe you,
he stated, after a short, considering silence. Then the owner gave his agent a wink.
You can relax now, Caro. You survived your encounter with Courage. I won't ask you to do something like that again. It was a mistake on my part. Here.
Grisholt pawed at a cushion and slipped it off the seat, revealing a sliding panel. He removed this as well and reached inside the hole meant for long journeys when he didn't wish to step outside to use a latrine. Reaching just under the lip of the hole and grimacing, realizing full well where he had his hand, he brought forth a leather purse. He handed it over to his man.
Take this. You know what to do with it. I'll have a few lads around to ensure no one robs you later.
Blinking and making the effort to relax, Caro reached out with two functioning hands and took the small leather bag from his employer.
Yes,
Grisholt went on, convinced that his agent hadn't compromised anything else to Courage, and thankful he didn't have to dispose of him. Even though the interior of the coach was frayed, it was still clean and quite comfortable. Killing a man inside of it would only bring about bad luck on this day. Instead, he went about replacing the panel and cushion, smoothing it when done.
We won't do that again. Not if he's going to be that way.
I should have realized it was dark courage we were dealing with.
My mistake, good Caro. Have no worries. Now then, can you do the task at hand?
Caro nodded, finding his backbone.
Excellent. Then we're done here.
Bring the gold to my viewing chamber once you have it. With that, he leaned over and opened the door for Caro, shooing him out. When the spy was gone, Grisholt closed the door and tugged on his beard unconsciously, swearing at himself and Courage. The gall of the brute to terrorize his messenger. Caro had gotten off lucky this time around, and so had Grisholt. It would be the last time he approached Courage with any information. Scowling, he wrapped the wood behind his head. A second later, the coach labored onwards. As they approached the inner city and Sunja's pit, Grisholt opened his shutters and recognized the wagon carrying Gunjar and a handful of his other fighters steering towards the entrance of the sun, while his coach veered towards the stone and timber booths of the domus, where wagers were placed. The driver got as close as possible to the four booths, as Grisholt ordered him to, before they left the estate. And he waited until Bracchus opened the door. Then Grisholt stepped out into the sun with a snarl of a squint on his face.
Miserable heat.
Grisholt switched from the hateful ball overhead to the lines of peasants waiting for their turn with the domus. Scars could be seen in menacing full armor, watching the crowds for any sign of trouble. Four lines of people stretched back from the open windows where one placed wagers, and Grisholt had no intention of waiting at the end of any of them. With the intimidating form of Bracchus behind him, glaring at the world with his one working eye, and a hand on the pommel of his sword, Grisholt summoned a smile and made his way to the front of the nearest line. He didn't excuse himself, and the gathered people took note of him with indignation, quickly suppressed when Brackus came into view. The 7 or 8 scars standing about did nothing to stop the stable owner, which added even more insult to the people waiting in line. Grishold detected the repressed sputters, and his smile widened. He knew the scars recognized him, and he knew they would only act if a fight started. Unlikely, with Brackus on his heel. The second peasant in line frowned and relinquished his place without a word when he saw Grisholt and then Brackus. When the owner reached his selected window, he stared at the back of the head of the man who hadn't noticed him, and continued making his wager. Brackus stepped in and shoved the peasant aside, pushing him away from the window and surprising the domus within. A glare from the henchman silenced any protest from both men. Grisholt stepped up with an unruffled sigh and a pleasant demeanor. 10 gold on Gunja, stable of Grisholt, he announced just loud enough so that those nearby would hear the princely sum. He only needed a few ears, and the reaction would be swift. No one placed that amount of coin on a fighter without knowing something, and the peasants behind him would be quick to choose Gunja themselves. Already he sensed eyes on his back, and felt a greedy energy building in the air. The domus, a shorter man who squinted, made the wager and handed over the marker. Grisholt snatched it away without a word of thanks. With a glaring Brackus securing his back, Grisholt returned to his coach, ignoring the wary looks from those he passed. He pulled to all the shutters once inside his transport. It wouldn't keep the smell of unwashed bodies out, but at least he didn't have to see the populace. He leaned towards one window and, after a moment, opened it just a crack. There, he spotted Kero at the back of the nearest line. Smiling to himself, Grisholt rapped on the wall behind him, prompting the coach to lurch forward. He twirled the ends of his beard. Kero would quietly place a 50 gold bet on Gunjar's opponent, whoever he was. Kero knew, and that was all that mattered. 50 gold coins was, in fact, almost the last of Grisholt's existing treasury. But it was worth it. The winnings would give Grisholt stable breathing room once more. This year, he wanted to be more aggressive in his wagering. He didn't want to ever reach his current financial state ever again. The coach stopped once more, and Grisholt waited until Brackus opened the door. I feel lucky. The stable owner smiled at his bodyguard before pointing beyond him. Brackus then became a meaty knife, cutting a path between the crowds entering the gate of the sea. Grisholt followed with 3 more of his lads guarding his back. Brackus led the little band to the private entryway allowed only for owners and other important figures. Grisholt was glad for the entrance as it bypassed the free, trained nest completely. They had to pass the stairs that descended into the general quarters, and the stench that rose from that black throat made Grisholt want to heave up whatever was left in his stomach. Once off the public walkways, and descending another set of stairs, Brackus steered them towards a private room, one of several that allowed owners or house gladiators to look out at the arena sands at foot level. Once inside, the door was closed behind the party. It wasn't the most comfortable of rooms, bare except for a few benches, and built out of the same brick, mortar, and timber as the rest of the arena. But it afforded a certain amount of privacy to the owners. Sand sometimes blew in from the arched window, flush with the arena floor, but this particular day, Grisholt was glad to see that it hadn't happened yet. He waited until Brackus got out of his way and proceeded to the archway, stopping a foot before the window and peering outside. If he leaned forward, he could very well rest his elbows on the chest-high ledge. Not that he would do such a thing. He didn't want to get any closer and risk ruining his appearance or scent. After this day, he would have the coin to place more wagers, as well as to purchase much-needed goods for both the stable and himself. Beyond the arched window, the sand glowed, almost blinding, while rising heat distorted the very air.
Miserable heat,
Grisholt scoffed, dabbing a handcloth at his neck. The benches in the room were hard to the ass and not at all to his liking. But he sat on the cleanest-looking one and waited for the first fight to begin. Brackus stood, eyes flickering towards the sand and no doubt remembering his own short but violent career in the pit.
Do you miss it?
Grisholt asked him. Brackus took a moment before answering.
No.
Liar,
the owner thought smugly, kneading the end of his beard with two fingers.
This is going to be a very good day.
He looked expectantly at the arched window.
Lucky, lucky, lucky.
It was at that precise moment the door to the private chamber opened, and in walked Dark Kurge himself. Kurge regarded them all with a black countenance, like a venomous butcher working his blade through a stubborn piece of gristle. He stood in the center of the room, challenging any who dared take a swing, wearing black trousers and a tunic the color of sand. A single hand axe hung off a wide black belt, and Grisholt was quick to notice that it was well within reach of Kurge's right hand if he needed it quickly. Grisholt did not think he would need it, at all. He had to consciously let his breath out. Kurge stared out the archway, taking in the sand of the arena as though seeing it for the first time. Then he centered on a tense Brackus, who, like the other three guards, stood with his hand on his sword. Kurge eyed him with malice, his lips curling in a silent challenge to pull steel. Behind the ogre dominating the room lurked a bear of a man, not as tall as Kurge himself, but as wide as the door. A thick X of studded leather crossed his chest, while a paw of a hand gripped a scabbarded broadsword. Kurge's fearsome killer, black of hair and beard, closed the door and stood with his broad back against it. He glared at Grisholt as well, delivering the unspoken message that he was quite willing to spill blood if commanded.
"Grisholt," Kurge rumbled, not taking his eyes off Brackus. "I wanted to thank you for this morning's message."
Kurge then turned his murderous gaze upon Grisholt with all the scorching heat of a midday sun.
"Ah!"
Grisholt started. He made to stand, but Kurge tisked no. The killer that the one-armed owner brought along glared at Grisholt's four guards, and Grisholt suspected that the man could butcher the lot if given the command.
"Ah, you're welcome, good Kurge. Glad to be of service. I had hoped to make a few gold coins with the information, but my man said he caught you perhaps a little too early in the morning."
"He did. My apologies." Kurge didn't blink. "I wasn't overly offended. I left him his fingers. And his balls." This set Grisholt's eyes to flutter for a moment, as if a horse had kicked in his skull. He cleared his throat, composing himself.
"Ah, well, I appreciate that. What do you care if the topper has balls or not? Not a daisy, are you?"
This struck Grisholt speechless.
No, I'm not,"
he finally managed.
"This place."
Kurge took his eyes off the man for a moment and gestured with his stump, which disturbed Grisholt for some reason he could not quite identify.
"Feels like a grave. You really can't see much down here, can you?"
"We see enough."
"This is only my first, second time at this level. I was fortunate enough to inherit my father's run of luck when I assumed command of his house. Never stepped beyond the view box of the top three. One sees everything up there. Everything. All the feints and strikes. The tactics and strategy."
"We see that down here as well,"
Grisholt said quietly, trying hard not to look at Dark Kurge's stump.
"Lords above, the man was well over 60,
yet the aura he projected was as menacing as a full complement of battled hardened Sujins.
As a matter of down here,"
Kurge cut him off, "you are limited. You have no idea how limited until you are up there looking down. Do you get my meaning?"
"Yes."
"Good. I wish to say two things and I'll be off. One, thank you for the information. To be honest, I haven't thought of Clavellus in an age. What the free trained want with him, I have no idea, nor do I truthfully care, as long as he stays away. And two, don't ever send your man to visit me at such a damn early hour ever again. Not if you wish him back."
Grisholt nodded his understanding. "I apologize for—"
Kurge's chilling smile killed the sentence.
"Simon's unholy ass crack. I can't keep this up."
He shook his head wearily and glanced back at his killer.
"Demaster, what's the best way of dealing with a weasel?"
Kill it,
the brute answered, glowering. Kill it. My father warned me of men such as you, Grishot. There's only one thing worse than a house with a vengeance, my father would say, and that is a house wanting your place. So I'll be blunt and not mince words. Don't cross me, you grey-haired prick, nor tie with me, and same on take you now if you actually think to outwit me. If you do, I'll start a house war and see your shack crushed like balls under my boot. I'll make it my hobby to see that every one of your maggots is matched against my killers each and every time they set foot on the arena sand and hacked to pieces in the most horrific way possible. I'll destroy whatever you have beyond these walls, Grishot, whatever few planks nailed together that your father had such high hopes for. I'd even make the argument for bringing back the old custom of master fights and challenge you personally. I'd take great pleasure in splitting that skull of yours, just to see how unfit it is inside. At this, Bracchus bristled and visibly restrained himself, and, unfortunately, drew attention. Curd glared at Grishold's one-eyed bodyguard. Something bothering you, maggot shite! Tension, the likes of which Grishold had never experienced, lashed at his heart and senses, causing him to stroke his beard with brisk flicks of his hand. Bracchus didn't like being talked to in such a manner, only because Grishold was certain his bodyguard wasn't entirely aware of Dark Courage's reputation. Grishold was very much aware. His father had also been exceptionally wary and had taken time to ensure his son understood the dangers of any contact with the Courages, dangers that never seemed more imminent than this exact moment. When his one-eyed guard looked at the floor, Grishold almost expired with relief.
No, I thought not,
Courage rumbled, his attention lingering on Bracchus for a few moments more.
I don't wish to see you again, Grishold. I certainly don't wish to see that messenger of yours again, and I certainly never want to smell this lavender shite you must have bathed in for a year to smell so damned ripe. Do you understand?
I think you and I...
Courage waved his stump as if clearing the air.
Do you really think there is a you and I here? Does this look like a meeting of equals, huh?
No.
Good. You understand, then?
I understand,
he whispered.
Excellent. Thank you for the winnings, by the way.
Grishold didn't get the man's meaning, and his expression said as much.
10 gold on Gunjar.
Courage screwed up his mouth.
Bit obvious, don't you think?
Especially when my lads know your man's face now.
Caro is his name, I believe. I don't suppose Caro was wagering all that coin against Gunjar, do you?
Grishold blinked, suddenly unable to master his voice.
Oh, he placed your wager, have no fear. Courage hissed. This time.
Thank you.
Grishold managed, trying unsuccessfully to regain his dignity. Courage made a face.
And I tell you, perfumed shite is still shite.
The one-armed beast locked eyes with him for a moment, and Grishold blinked, fighting down the urge to look anywhere but into those steely blue chips of ice. Then Courage gestured with his stump, and the bear behind him threw the door open. Courage left then, his bald head glistening with sweat. The one called the Master followed, showing his back to Grishold's guards and letting them know what he thought. Outside, the orator cried out the introductions. Gunjar's name could be heard, but Grishold did not bother standing up to watch. He no longer felt lucky. Chapter 21 The Master followed his employer outside and slammed the door behind him. He turned, not bothering to nod at the 4 extra warriors standing in the corridor, and all of them fell into step behind Courage as he stalked away.
Little shite,
flashed in Courage's mind. Some of these lesser houses and stables had to be watched, and Grishold in particular. It was as his father said, never turn your back on a hungry dog. He'd get Bazange to keep an eye on him. He walked through the whitewashed walls a short distance before climbing the stairs leading back to his viewing box. His house had maintained their ranking for so long that it was difficult to think otherwise.
and that the other two owners were merely temporary, unwanted guests. Kurds consoled himself with that very thought.
Hungry dogs,
he thought, as he directed Demaster to stand just outside with his men. And now, wolves. Kurge opened the door and snatched a silver goblet from a serving tray, startling the wench holding it. He downed the wine in gulps, smacked his lips while staring at the wall, and waited for her to refill it. Once done, he made his way to his seat and plopped down on the green satin cushions.
"Decided to join us, eh?"
Nexus asked him. Kurge didn't bother looking at the old wine merchant who, in his opinion, was a noisy nuisance. The gold-faced Gastillo he could bear, as he'd been brought up near the fights, but not this silver-haired, black-eyed weasel, trying to learn everything at once, and believing himself to be the best. The arrogance of the man cut at Kurge's patience. It was only a week ago he'd lost a fighter to a free-trained, something that put the merchant in his place. Kurge didn't know how much control Nexus was wresting from his taskmasters during this season, but while in the city, and assuming in his role of manager, Kurge believed the merchant was probably close to driving them insane.
"Don't answer me, then,"
Nexus said in an unbothered voice. Kurge glared past the fitted brick of the box and into the arena. The fight had finished. One gladiator strutted off the sands while another had to be walked off by a pair of men.
You missed it.
Gastillo sounded bored, his words carrying the barest note of metal as they passed the lips of his golden mask.
The stable of Grisholt almost lost a man this day to another free-trained lout. The upset of the day, I imagine.
That softened Kurge's mood somewhat. When his agent saw both Grisholt and Caro place their wagers, he gave the nod to Bazange to find out who Caro was wagering on, and placed his own wager. He couldn't remember the last time any of Grisholt's lads had actually won a match, but he had to shake his head at the simplicity of the ploy. Instructing his fighter to lose, making a show of placing coin on him while having another man place a much larger wager on the opponent, wasn't unheard of amongst the owners. One had to have gold to keep it all running, but pompous Grisholt was just so obvious about it. It made Kurge ill. The gold he'd won would relieve some of that discomfort, some of which he'd pass off to Bazange for detecting the scheme in the first place. But he told himself once again to keep an eye on the man and his stable of fighters.
You wouldn't know anything about that, would you?
Gastillo asked.
What's this?
Kurge tore his attention from the arena and focused on his companion to the far right, sunlight flashing off Gastillo's metal face.
Are you stabbing at me, good Gastillo? A man of your honor? Let me remind you, since your brain is obviously cooking under that sheet of cheap tin you're wearing, that I lost a warrior just recently, a particularly expensive investment, I might add. We'll see how well you take such a loss when the day comes about. And it will, and I'll be right here when it does, remembering this exact moment.
It was saucy of you, Nexus agreed in smug fashion.
Don't come to my defense, Nexus,
Kurge said out of the corner of his mouth, waving his goblet underneath his nose and inhaling its scent.
I haven't the stomach for it right now.
Nexus and Gastillo exchanged looks, sly ones at that, and returned to watching the sands. Kurge took in the sheer, stony scope of the arena, noting the seats were half empty. He knew in his blackest of hearts the pair would not stay quiet for long.
Sour mood you're in,
Nexus said eventually. Kurge rolled his eyes.
Who wouldn't be sour when he has to put up with the likes of you beside him?
Seddon's heaven, Nexus bit back. If I'd known the entertainment was going to be as good up here as on the arena floor, I'd have come here much, much sooner.
Usually the men about me listen to what I have to say. These little lashes you throw out are amusing. I hope my boot amuses you when you find it up your hole.
Nexus's smug expression sagged almost immediately.
That's better.
Kurge pressed on.
I like it when you're quiet. Just like a woman. Eh, Gastillo?
But Gastillo did not answer.
Ha ha, that's right. You're still kissing his ass behind my back. Let me guess the conversation when I'm not about.
That lad looks about done.
Yes, you're quite right, Nexus.
I believe these free-trained pences are thicker these days than any other.
Yes, once again you're quite right. It surprises me how observant you are in your first season of the games.
Nexus's lips puckered as though his wine had soured, but Castillo's golden face was unreadable.
You go too far, you loud bastard.
That's the first real thing you've said to me since I arrived here, Nexus,
Courage said. Just remember whose tongue is in your ass when I sit down. Or perhaps, if my words are too salty, you might seek company that's more agreeable.
I'll be looking forward to our matches together, Courage.
If your howl-pups are as good with a blade as you are with barbs, perhaps I'll manage to stay awake. Oh, hold on, that's right. One of your dogs was killed by a free-trained. You'll be busy with blood matches, I expect. You can be sure I'll have time for your lads once that's done, Courage rumbled. I look forward to it.
Courage regarded Nexus for a moment and saw the hard stare directed back at him.
Say what one would about the man, Courage told himself. The wine merchant was more than willing to sling barbs, unlike the gold-plated tit on the far side.
What does Castillo have to say about that, huh?
Courage asked in a loud voice. You look like you might be shivering over there underneath that shiny face of yours. When does one of your lads grace the arena sands? When will we see Gastillo's hell pups fight? The golden visage didn't move.
Soon,
brushed past the metal lips. Courage let him be, hoping that Nexus might learn something about keeping a quiet tongue. Chapter 22 A boot nudged Harm, waking him from his sleep. The early morning smells of the surrounding forest made him crack his eyes wider and sit up amongst some sparsely growing grass.
You're taken to sleeping outside very well,
Mullock informed him.
After the pit, anywhere's a good place to sleep. You're right there.
Anything to eat? Only if you brought it yourself.
Mullock walked deeper into the forest.
Where are you going?
Harm asked. Mullock turned and grabbed his crotch.